Yeah, always good.
Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone, and this is Carl from Carl's Cavern. Nice to have you with us. And, of course, with me is my partner in crime, my sister from another mother, whatever you want to call her, Miss Rachel. Hello, Miss Rachel.
Hello, everybody. How are you doing tonight? I hope you're going to have as much fun as we do, because this one is a really excellent show.
Yeah. So I have to admit that we were talking and Rachel mentioned the Cuphead show. And what was my first reaction? So they're like, what the fuck is that?
You're like, yeah, I don't know about that, but cool idea, bro. Thanks.
You know, and then I watched it. And let me tell you something. I am mightily impressed. And we're actually going to do, the shows are only like 15 minutes long, so we're going to do 3 episodes tonight as commentary. But before we do that, there's a little history to this, which I am not that familiar with. So why don't you, Miss Rachel, give us what you know about the history and where this whole show came from and all that sort of good stuff.
And wow. It's quite an interesting little history because there's not a whole lot of it. But the Cuphead show originally started as a game just called Cuphead, which was produced by this indie game company, these two brothers. Let's see, the Moldenhauer brothers. I remember that. It's Jared and I think like Peter maybe. Started mm-hmm. Studio MDHR, so it's two brothers, two programmers. They come out with this game called Cuphead, which I have not played myself, but I've talked to a lot of people who have, and they've all had the same consensus. Like, it is a beautiful game, but it is so fucking hard, which is the main complaint from anybody who's played the game, is like it's incredibly hard, but it's still worth it just for the animation and the story, which is what
okay,
takes
so,
us to, yeah.
So,
go ahead,
so I do have to say something about the game itself. I have not played the game. I don't know anything really about the history of the game, but I was speaking to my former partner, Stephen Ronquillo, and Stephen had his own take on it, and this is what he said. Imagine if you had a gold-plated dildo that was just so beautiful to watch, but the only way you could deal with it is the only way that it would work is if you shoved it up your ass. And he says, that's how hard the game is. He says, that game is impossible to win. And he said he spent weeks and months on trying to beat that game. So that comes from Steven.
Yeah. Well, I've had a lot of friends that have absolutely loved it. And it was actually a friend of the podcast, our dear Joshua Buckland, who introduced my 4-year-old to Cuphead.
That does not surprise
no,
me at all.
Yeah.
And so
well,
if
he's
people,
also, he's
exactly
also the reason I have the entirety of Sam and Max, which if you haven't seen that one, that's a fun one.
Okay, so the reason why I mentioned Joshua and why it's not surprising is Joshua works with our art and that sort of thing, and the animation to this is so beautiful. And I'll get into the animation as we do some of the commentary watches on it. But the one thing about the animation is it harkens back to the early 30s and early 40s, okay, 30s to 40s. And at that time, there was a specific type of animation, which they call rubber hose animation. And what that basically means is that any of the arms or any of the legs that are animated are bendable like a rubber hose. There's no joints. There's no hand movements. It's all this flowing animation, which at the time was cutting edge. Of course, as you got animators that did, you know, got to know more and more about animation, then that went out of favor, and then it became much more realistic. Well, in this case, it's really nice that you have a show that harkens back to this type of style. And we're talking like Max Fleischer, early Disney, you know, the Silly Symphonies.
Yeah.
And as we get into
the Silly Symphonies and Steamboat Willie and things like that. And I love that this show, and you guys will see that in a minute, I love that this show, like, is not making fun of or appropriating. It is done with the utmost, like, sincere adulation.
Respect.
Or adoration of these, and yes, respect for these original cartoons. So I really, really appreciated that side of it. Now,
and
we probably need to let every...
Okay, go ahead.
I was going to say, we probably need to let everybody know that we're doing this on Netflix because it is a Netflix original series. And yes, they have already discussed season 2 coming out. So I was really
Actually,
excited
season
to learn
two
that.
And
today.
Season 3. Season
oh,
2
I didn't
and
see
season
part
3.
About...
Yeah.
Oh, that's even better. That is even
yeah.
better.
Now, what I was going to say was, it not only is the animation, but it's the whole package. The music, the people going into song, all this harkens back to a much earlier era. And that to me is one of the wonderful things about this program and this type of animation. I don't know if you know this, Rachel, but back in the 80s, when I was in New York and I was young, I went to the New School for a special class on animation with Leonard Maltin. Now, you know, the film reviewer and so on and so forth. And I have loved animation since I was a kid, since I was very, very young. And to learn some of the history from Leonard Maltin and just to see these old Fleischer cartoons was my first real introduction to this style of animation, which we're going to see. So, yeah, shall we not maybe do our first commentary watch on the first episode?
What was that?
Should we not start now with the commentary on the first episode?
Oh, absolutely. And I've got mine queued up already.
So do I. Now what you have is you go to Netflix, you go to the Cuphead show, and it's the the first episode, and it's called Carnival. And we're going to go 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, and then go, and we push on go. Are you ready, Miss Rachel?
Yes, and I want to go ahead and say I do not want to do any commentary during the first run through of the opening sequence because that one needs to be just watch absolute insanity.
Oh, absolutely. I agree with that. We'll start when the story starts. So here we go. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, and go.
Boom,
and that's Cuphead.
Maybe 29 miles.
Now, Dave Lawson is the is the runner on this, the showrunner, and he's a very, very big fan of this type of animation. See what I mean about rubber hoses?
Absolutely. You got to have the dancing happy flowers and all the, you know, perfect breakfast scene. I always loved these when I was a kid.
Aww.
On pancakes. That's a good brother, though.
Yes, it is.
You two are in for a real treat. You get to paint the fence.
Now, what is it about painting the fence? Because they always paint the fence.
Well, I was actually going to explain that. So thank you for bringing it up, Carl. The painting the fence is a recurring theme in shows like this because what does it put you in mind of? It's a very Tom Sawyer, Huckleberry Finn kind of vibe, right?
Right.
With the establishing at the beginning with the painting of the fence scene, you automatically know that these two motherfuckers love the hell out of each other, and they are going to get into some crazy trouble, okay? And there you go.
And boy, do they ever.
So, it is. It's establishing the Tom Sawyer Huck Finn relationship where they're, you know, even if they're not actual brothers, they are brothers and they're going to stick together and do some really crazy shit, get into trouble with everybody, and it's going to be hilarious.
Now, you've got two of them. The one in red is the one who loves danger, and the other one is the more responsible one. You know what? When I was a kid, I was basically the one that was eating.
Yeah, I love this scene, by the way.
Yes.
Snowball. So, of course, I think we see where this is going.
Okay, so one of the things I want to talk about is you can see the backgrounds in this are backgrounds, you know, they're painted backgrounds, but the animation is in front of it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And this is very, very much the style of the 30s. Because they would have matte paintings directly on the film. Uh-oh.
Oh, dear.
Oh, no.
I'm sorry. And by the way, I just want you to know that the background music, if you actually, I was listening to it like on super loud earlier. And I love the soundtrack because not only an amazing song and dances that come out, but it's the kind of soundtrack where a lot of the effects in like the sound effects are actually just, you know, punctuated instruments from the orchestra, and I love it.
But you're absolutely right about that. And that was very, very much accented in Warner Brothers. But going before that, take a look at the style of the music here. It's very, very much Cab Calloway. It's all Cab Calloway, which is from the 30s. And it is so good and so well done in that style.
Mm-hmm.
And that particular thing that we're seeing with the black background and that's very, very common also. and the shadows, everything. And I love him. I was singing.
I love it. Mash it. The devil is definitely my favorite character in this show. I mean, I love Elder Kettle and Cuphead and Mugman, but the devil is just hilarious.
Now, there's a recurring character I love, which is the Dice Man.
Oh, that's true.
And you know who voices that particular character?
Isn't that Wayne Brady?
Yes, exactly. That's where I was going.
Yeah. And the other thing I love about this is this particular kind of animation style where if you were going to have, like, two guys that had cups for heads, like, obviously nothing else is questioned. Like, there was a giant pig man eating hot dogs, or pork sausages, more likely.
Yeah.
There's giant vegetables, but there's also giant animals, and then there's just giant, like, instruments. And I mean, I love that. Like, there's nothing that they can't just throw in there at this point.
And here you have the brothers. The one saves the other.
Well, I mean, that's classic for stories like this, but not all of their episodes in this show revolve around stuff like that.
No. But now you've got classic Max Flesher and Betty Boop and the Halloween stuff. This is all classic. The devil design is
classic.
Oh, no,
you get
everything.
The Super Betty Boop on the Chalice episode.
Yes.
I loved Chalice. She was funny.
Yes.
And you've got the, you know, skeleton horses, the old gag, you know, always stop for the cheesy picture real quick. And
and the eyes that are following them and everything is. This is wonderful.
And then, again, I'm going to point out the soundtrack in the background, it's all original to this show. So, like, they did a fantastic, amazing, wonderful job of putting this together.
Oh, absolutely. But to me, it's really everything. It's the score, the animation. They really knew what they were doing. And the other thing is they really know their old animation. This is so much different than anything else I've seen as far as modern animation. Seriously.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, we've got a lot going on the good end of modern animation, but for more adult animation, like Love, Death, and Robots.
Mm-hmm.
But this is good not only for adults like me who love these kind of cartoons when they were a kid, but also, like I said, my four-year-old's the one that made me watch this.
Yeah. And that's wonderful that this is being reintroduced, this style, to a younger audience. They wouldn't know this style. And they may not understand that it's a different style, like at Brahman's age at four, but they will.
You don't get to just run away. Yeah. Well, and the other thing is, I love that there's something so decidedly, deliciously weird that's actually appropriate for my kids, because I grew up on stuff like that, and then things got, like, really, really watered down. I'm glad that these weird things are back.
You know who I blame for that? Dora the Explorer.
Yes.
And Blue's Clues and stuff like that. I mean, you need shows like that. But I grew up with Warner Brothers, which is all violence and cross-dressing rabbits and sheep.
Well, and see, so I love this because one of the end of the episode right there, and you can see all of the amazing talent here. Everybody involved in this show is fucking fantastic. I think they all deserve awards, but everybody go ahead and stop the show real quick because we're not going into the very next episode. We're going to play a different one. So after you saw that first episode, Carl, what did you have to say?
Well, what I was, it's basically what I've said already. The animation and the stylism and that they're taking from the early animators, particularly Flesher. Flesher is one of those forgotten, I think, by modern audiences. But, you know, Betty Boop is his most famous creation. But Flesher did the first Superman cartoons in the 50s. And they're friggin' gorgeous.
Absolutely.
Just wonderful. And then as we get into this next one, which is Ghost Ain't Real, which we'll get to here. That's episode 6 for everyone. And the way you get to the episodes, you'll see on the bottom right-hand corner this square with other squares behind it. You just click on that and then go to episode 6, Ghost Ain't Real. We're going to get there in a moment here. But that's what you're going to do. But, it's the sense that it's a really, really great homage and great bow down to the early animators, particularly Flesher. And also, when we get into Ghost Ain't Real, there's some real Disney in it, too. And Silly Symphony.
Oh, absolutely.
Right there.
I think it's just absolutely fantastic that there's people out there that respect this kind of stuff like I do. I was telling you, Carl, that I actually have a box set at the house that is pretty much every single Flesher episode of something, you know, of this style of animation, all the Betty Boops and everything like that. And my youngest absolutely loves it. Like, he's kind of mad at me that I put it in storage for a while, but I'm going to have to bring it out and watch it again because yay, Cuphead.
You know, and we were talking as we were developing this show. I grew up with Warner Brothers, and I love Warner Brothers. That's my first love. But the other studios, like Flesher, and then UPA, United Paramount affiliates, UPA is really, really good, too, particularly their Halloween stuff. Telltale Heart, and then again, Gerald McBoing and that. But I think the real, when we get into television animation, we get into Hanna-Barbera, it becomes more of a product than art. All right? You would agree with that?
Absolutely. I am sorry. This, you know, might be an unpopular opinion, and no offense to some people I know in the industry that have actually worked at Hanna-Barbera Studios. I'm not trying to be offensive to your work personally. I just loathe Hanna-Barbera. I do not like any of their animations.
Well, it's incredibly limited, right? Between Hanna-Barbera and Filmation, where Ralph Bakshi started, it's all backgrounds, and it's just one or two backgrounds, which they repeat all the time. The idea was they wanted to do it inexpensively for TV because doing these type of shows is much more expensive. Trust me. They spent a pretty penny on this. I guarantee you.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. And the only limited TV stuff that I do like is Jay Ward, which is Rocky and Bullwinkle. And that's because of the writing. Because it was so smart, right? And that's the other thing, too. You know, the writing has to be really smart. You know, like if you go into Warner Brothers, the main writer was Mark Maltese. And, the scripts were just so outrageous and so anarchic. And that's what I love in cartoons. This has a lot of anarchy in it. And that makes me extremely happy.
Oh, absolutely. And it's the absurd, bizarre, you know, they're going to shoot off on a rocket and splat into the moon because it's made of cheese. And, I mean, yes, I love this show because it's just so just bizarre and wonderful.
You know, and the other thing, too, is you'll notice a lot of violence in this show. And, of course, I grew up with Warner Brothers, which is, like, incredibly violent. But it's cartoon violence. And this kickback on violence in cartoons, I think, is sort of misplaced, to be honest. Because if you take away the anarchy in that, what do you have? Boredom. And teaching
right.
stuff.
And I have no problem with my four-year-old seeing this because, like, okay, yeah, obviously this isn't real, honey, because this guy is running around with a cup full of milk for a head. So, like, obviously this isn't real, so it's not encouraging anything. And she loved pretend that she's scared of all the little heebie-jeebie parts. Like, oh, I'm so scared. He's going to get his soul.
And it's just so good. Seriously.
Yeah, it's what I remember cartoons as when I was very, very young before, you know, everything started getting watered down towards the end of, you know, my childhood and definitely for my children's both. So I really enjoy things like this and how they were able to bring it into the modern era. But I think we should go ahead and start with our next episode, which is episode 6, Ghost
which
Ain't
is
Real.
Ghost Ain't Real. Okay, hold on, I'm going to get there in a moment. Okay, give me a moment. I'm old and decrepit, so it takes me a little while.
It's all that technology you're having to work. I understand.
Exactly.
The old man.
Okay. Okay, so hold on. And let me go back. Okay, so I'm ready to go. And we're at episode 6, Ghost Ain't Real. Right? And we're going to do the 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, go again. Okay? 5.
All right, let's do it.
4, 3, 2, 1, go. It's a Netflix show. Now we can talk. Okay, the plane that you see goes back to the Universal cartoon. I love the music to this, by the way.
Yes. And if you're like me and you watch everything with subtitles, it's hilarious. We've got the heebie-jeebies.
And I do love he plays the trombone.
I love that it's the Dakota.
Yes. Okay, so the music is by Ego Plum. Ooh. They're out of a zombie movie and they're laughing.
Yeah, I know. You only need to change your pants 3 times. Better take a shortcut through the old creepy cemetery.
I love the background art to this too. It's so nice. Notice how it moves, right? It's moving, and
they do that with a
circular thing that they crank, and it's wonderful. in the foreground and the background. Okay, so the guy that has the big nose and is the hobo,
mm-hmm.
that is a direct steal. That's a direct steal from Fleischer. And that's not exactly a steal. We talk about it, it's a homage. But they are referencing everything from the old style cartoons.
Oh, absolutely. And I always loved the, you know, skeleton dance ones and the little creepy Halloween graveyard ones. I always thought those were so fun. And honestly, if you've ever seen the music video for the Squirrel Nut, I think it's the Squirrel Nut Zippers. Yeah. Ghost of Stephen Foster.
Yes.
I love that video. And it's the same style of, you know, rubber hose animation and all of that, but it's modern, so.
Right. You know, there were things like the Squirrel Nut Zippers, and there's a couple others that I noticed over the years that would do like a one-off on this type of animation. But it's not like it's a, you know, the whole show or anything like that.
Yeah. And I love how the milk moves around in their mugs. It's like the few times you see into the top of the mug, you can see the little swirls for the straw and stuff. That's so funny.
Yep.
And they're also very conscious of the fact that they have, like, mugs of liquid foreheads. Like,
yes.
There's one point where his mug gets drained and his eyeballs go.
Yep.
I love that. I think you would definitely be the mug man of the two, Carl.
What? You would be the mug man.
I would be the
mug
man?
Is that what you said?
No, I said you would be the mug man.
Oh,
I would be Cuphead. You would be mug man.
Yeah, I would be mug man.
I'm the reckless weirdo of the two.
Yeah, exactly. Can you imagine an animated series of the two of us doing podcasts? That would be hysterical.
Oh, God. I'm sorry, I'm being kind of quiet, but I love these episodes like this. The jump scares.
The other thing is, look at the facial expressions. The facial expressions are so good.
I was
going to
mention that. Of course, you have to have the screaming alarm bell ringing.
Okay, the music is beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, that gag with the
screaming uvula.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, this is all silly stuff in these here. This is Walt Disney being scary.
Exactly.
This is all silly symphonies. And I love that there's a tuba and a marching band.
Yes. So, yeah. Oh, yeah, classic eyeballs in the dark routine.
And the eyes. Oh, okay. Here, this is why we're doing this episode. This is so much Silly Symphony. Look at the
yeah, I was about to say
the
skeleton
shadows,
dance,
everything.
And, yeah.
Now, personally, I'd be sitting down and watching that shit. I wouldn't be scared. Oh. Okay. I hate to tell you this, but that is a nod to Gremlins too.
Yeah. Like I said, I loved the Silly Symphony stuff because they were just so weird and kooky.
Yeah.
And the Casper cartoons and...
The Casper cartoons were not nearly as anarchic. All the doors were
afraid. Well, I don't know. People like jumping out of their skin and stuff every time they see this ghost.
So Fletcher.
Yeah.
Okay, here this type of animation is actually Bachelor and Hallis, which comes from the 50s. That very,
well,
very
unique. Very,
go ahead.
It's also very Disney because this is hearkening back in a lot of spots to Pink Elephants on Parade.
Yes. But the thing is, when they did Pink Elephants on Parade, that was Bachelor and Hallis. That was Joy Hallis and Stanley Bachelor.
Yeah.
I don't think that was his first name. I'd have to check. Oh, no, they're dead. And they're just having fun. They just wanted to scare you to scare you. They didn't want you to get hurt.
Oh. Sorry about the dogs. They're getting excited. Apparently they like
no,
the anarchy
okay.
of the Cuphead show, too.
Okay. Love this.
Die, zombie, die! And again, just briefly run through, look at the credits there. It is a group of absolutely fantastic, phenomenal people. Guys, shut it. Sorry about that. And
yep.
So that one was just basically one of those one-off episodes. You know, it was, it's not tied to the normal story because, you know, the devil is the main recurring character in this one, and he's the one, you know, always trying to get Cuphead's soul. So I always like those little one-off episodes.
Mm-hmm. So the next one we're going to go to is episode 9. Now, this is the second episode of the invisible sweater that the devil can't get your soul if you have this invisible sweater. But the reason we're doing
it had to be knitted by his brother, Mugman. So, yeah.
Yeah. But there's a reason we're doing this one, because there is a direct homage to this one. And we'll get there in a moment. But any last things to say about the last episode that we watched?
No, just pretty much, like I said, I've always loved those episodes on, back when I was a kid. Those were my favorite ones, were those little one-offs where it was just like a random skeleton dance or, you know, something like that was always fun and creepy for me. So
mm-hmm.
I really appreciate that they did that.
Yeah, and I agree with that, too. The one thing I do want to mention is the end credits music, okay, with that honky-tonk piano. it's very, very much harkens back to silent movies.
Oh, absolutely.
And the music, again, we'll see his name. It's Ego Plum, I think, is his name. I don't know who he is, but, man, he's doing a job here. I mean, he's doing as well as the people from Warner Brothers and Henry Mancini and the Pink Panther and so on and so forth. I mean, this is really fine music. And, again, he knows his stylism, with the songs that are – I mean, it's all there. So as we watch this last episode that we're going to do a commentary on, listen to that end music again.
As we go
by. So here we are at episode 9. This is Sweater Luck next time. Okay, we're going to do the same thing. Okay, and we're going to go 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, and then go. Are you ready, Miss Rachel?
I'm ready.
All right, here we go. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, go. And yes, it's a Netflix show. And of course, here's the intro again. With
Which
our little universal
intro.
Plane. By the way, Inkwell Isles. That goes back to the first Fleischer cartoon, which is called Out of the Inkwell with Bosco. Okay, black and white. But that is definitely a nod to Fleischer. I needed to mention that before.
Yes, well, you and I had a real long talk about Fleischer on one of our earlier podcasts.
Right.
I think last year we did an animation appreciation of podcast, and we did some more talking about Fleischer, but not quite as much when we had my friend Philo Barnhart on the show.
Right, and in fact, we're going to get in touch with Philo, see if we can do a series with him on different studios. Okay, notice that the first music is the Toccata in D minor by Bach.
Yes.
I love the devil. And I love his minion, too, there with the cheesecake.
Yeah. Well, and I figured once you, like, really sat down and watched the show, like, got through an episode or two, you'd start to appreciate the music more. Because I remember we talked after you saw the first episode, and you were still kind of undecided about the music, but now that you've seen more of it, I think you understand it like I do. It is amazing.
Well, actually, I think I said the music was one of the best things about it in our first conversation. I'm not sure. I know by the second I said that. Second conversation.
Yeah.
Oh, that whole thing, that electrocution thing, that actually is more of Warner Brothers.
Yes, yes. And I was going to mention that. It's just, it's so great how they've, like, married all of these different styles into one recognizable homage to, like, all of these great animators and studios. It's really mind-blowing if you know what you're looking at.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, the radio with the talking horn, that goes back to Silly Symphonies and Merry Melodies.
Exactly. And I loved all of these gags, and I don't know why they stopped, using them in cartoons, because they're kind of easy for a kid to understand. Like, again, I know I keep bringing this up, but my 4-year-old loves it. My 12-year-old loves it. I love it. Even my parents thought it was great. And of course, I got Jeremy sitting in here watching it, and he's, like, fascinated.
Well, the other thing about this, too, is it's very much a set in the time. Look, there are no TVs. It's all radio. You know, so they're definitely setting it in the time of the 30s.
Oh, exactly. And, you know, they're taking a lot of, you know, the stereotypes and tropes that were used, you know, back then in cartoons, but they're kind of turning them on their head. Like the gypsy Vardo is actually, you know, Pork Rind's, you know, convenience store.
Right. I love Pork Rind's convenience store because I love Pork Rind.
Yeah, he's hilarious. Actually, the episode right after this one is one of my favorites, where they go on the errand for him.
Well, if you want to do that one, we could do that one too. We have time.
Oh no, it'll be all right. But it is a great episode, and it's, you know, one of the classic, you know, misadventures. Like, they did all of this because they didn't, you know, pay attention to something. They do every other episode is a standalone episode, and then, you know,
right,
the one before that is the one involving the main plot line with the devil and the soul.
Okay, here we go. This is why we're doing this, okay?
Yes. And this is absolutely like a direct steal from Fantasia.
From the Sorcerer's Apprentice. They use the same music and everything. Seriously, it is so wonderful.
Oh, it's a beautiful scene, but it's a scene that's like interspersed throughout this whole episode. I love it.
They are brothers, and they do love each other.
Oh, absolutely.
But this is friggin' beautiful. This is directly from Fantasia, the Sorcerer's Apprentice, and it is wonderful. Even that do 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 do, it's directly from the music and everything.
Kind of fight. Bragging.
Yeah. Which, of course, is Yosemite Sam.
Mm-hmm.
What? That's a battle.
So fast it'll tear your clothes off. Good Lord.
See, I had to take the invisible sweater off to take a pee.
I thought it was because he got hot waiting in the funnel cake line.
Maybe. But he said he had to go back to the restroom to find it, so I think...
Yeah. the exclamation point. Aw, he's bonding with the devil.
Edgar! That whole, I always eat popcorn. You knew that was going to happen.
Did you notice in that scene when they walk away at the end?
Yep.
When they walk away at the end, if you look at it, they were all white. You know, normally their arms and legs and stuff are black.
Yep. They're all white.
Everything was white. Yeah, I thought that was so funny.
And whoever is playing the piano is a damn good pianist. Look at all the people that did the animation to this. Stop motion, Foley artists. I mean, you got a lot of people working on this.
Oh, absolutely. And every single one of them is important and amazing. And, you know, there's a lot of celebrity voices in the cast. Like you mentioned Wayne Brady earlier. But if you actually watch the credits after episode, you'll see somebody, you know, relatively well known on each episode.
Yeah. Again, I am just thrilled that there is a choice for parents for their kids that actually showcases this type of animation and this type of humor.
And I honestly don't feel like it's just for the kids, because I enjoyed it as an adult, but I am one of those weird adults that genuinely enjoys animation, so that might have something to do with it. But
you know, that's the beauty of true animation, in that it has something for both the parents and the kids. I mean, you look at Warner Brothers, how much of that was, you know, talking about the stars of that era and the type of humor and so on and so forth that could entertain kids but also would entertain adults. That's really what you want to try. You know, that's the holy grail of doing a repetitive series of cartoons that you want both the kids and the parents to enjoy. You know, we didn't go back. We haven't mentioned Animaniacs, but Animaniacs to me is the greatest example of that in more modern animation. Because man, there were jokes in there that were not for kids, but kids wouldn't understand it, so it works.
But they would also present it in such a way that it was still funny to the kids. Without having to have the understanding of it. which is with, the gonzo humor and bonkers violence.
Right. Another, there's a couple of animators I want to mention, okay? So we're talking about Max Fleischer and we're talking about Disney. But those who don't know the real history of Disney, there was another animator before Walt Disney who worked for Disney. His name was Ub Iwerks. And I can't think of the rabbit's name, but they did a rabbit first before Mickey Mouse. And he was the one that really developed the style for the Silly Symphonies. And then Walt Disney took it over. So do want to mention Ub Iwerks. Another one is, what is his name? The one who did the Wolf Calls and that, Tex Avery. Tex Avery was one of the early Warner Brothers people who was one of the first ones to jump to MGM. And you see not much of Tex Avery in here, but you do, like the one you do see Tex Avery in is the one with the frogs. And the showboat, that one. So they are definitely referencing and cherry picking a number of people and a number of styles, and they are mixing them together extremely well, as you mentioned during that one episode. But to me, I loved animation when I was a kid. I've studied animation. Actually, took classes with Leonard Maltin back in the 80s about the history of animation. You can tell that these people love this early animation and really want to highlight it and really give it a homage and to introduce this style to a younger audience because it's not out there otherwise. And that, to me, is the crowning achievement of the Cuphead Show. And again, don't forget that this came from a video game. So you know what? I'm not a gamer, but I might start being one if they had more video games like that.
Absolutely. And I love the fact, I didn't mention this earlier, but closing arguments here. Hold on just a moment. Still the allergies. Sorry about that. The video game itself is a platformer-style video game, and that is homage to an older style of video game. Like, that's one of the original styles of video game was platformers. So I thought that was, they know what they're doing, and they're protecting and reviving the history of not only the gaming industry, because their studio has remained independent. They did get some distribution through like Microsoft, Nintendo, and all of that to bring Cuphead to a larger audience, remained independent, and they actually just released or are in the process of releasing the second Cuphead video game. And like Carl mentioned, they've already announced seasons 2 and 3 of the Cuphead show. So I just want to, shout out there to those guys. Thanks a bunch for making this happen for everybody. So, stay cool, brothers.
Oh, absolutely. And again, this was your, recommendation of doing a show on this, since April is humor month here at Deviant Legion. So I think at this point, do you have any other final things to say about the Cuphead Show? Because otherwise we're going to go into housekeeping.
Just that I'm looking forward to season 2.
Absolutely. So what we've got here, okay, just so that everyone knows, tomorrow at noontime Eastern Standard Time, and at 11 Central, we are going to welcome back author Joe Lansdale. Now, also with us tomorrow is my former partner, Stephen Ronquillo, will be joining us, along with myself and Rachel. Joe has a new book out, and I'm getting it in front of me now. It's called Born for Trouble, and it's like three or four novellas based on the further adventures of Hap and Leonard, which is his series of Edgar award-winning crime books. And they're set in East Texas. So we'll be talking to Joe about that and also what else he has in store, because he's always a busy guy. Also, you actually will have something to say to Joe too, won't you?
Yes, I'm very disappointed. I was expecting a cookbook. I thought we discussed this, but we'll get further into that tomorrow.
Also, he just produced last year, we had him on a while back talking about a movie that he produced and that his son co-wrote called The Pale Door. That is now running on Shudder, and I just watched it, and I really, really liked it. So we're going to talk a little bit about that, too, and also his upcoming projects in that. And it's always wonderful to have Joe on. Okay, so on Friday, the 15th, Adam is going to be doing the Cathode Ray Mission, and they're going to be going into the films of Sergio Leone. On Saturday, the 16th, Rachel and I are going to do a commentary watch. Do you remember what it's going to be, my dear?
A funny thing happened on the way to the forum.
You know, again, it's humor month here at Deviant Legion, and I thought, let's go old school with people like Jonathan Winters. Well, not Jonathan Winters, excuse me. Cyril Mostel, Jack Gilford, Buster Keaton, Bill Silvers. And also it's a Stephen Sondheim musical. And Stephen just passed away last year. So definitely looking forward to that. I'm a huge Cyril Mostel fan. I love Cyril. So we're going to do that on the 16th. On the 17th, TC is back with Rock This Town, our music show on Sundays, and he's going to be doing a tribute to 420, otherwise known as marijuana. Yes.
He's been waiting for this show for fucking ever. Just have to say that.
Absolutely. So on Wednesday, the 20th, Doc and Joey are back for the Graveyard Examiner, and they're going to be talking to two guests about the April Ghouls Drive-In, which always happens down in the Pittsburgh area. So we'll be talking about that. And I think it's about time we can actually say this, though it is not set in stone yet. It is basically concrete that is setting at this point. We just need to know where to put it on what day, and I'm waiting to hear back. But we are in talks right now with someone that I'm very, very pleased to have on, someone you should all know because she is the head of Trauma Entertainment, which, of course, gave us Sergeant Kabuki Man. And, of course, the Toxic Avenger, and I'm talking about Lloyd Kaufman. And we will have Lloyd Kaufman on before the end of the month. And we are very, very thrilled about that. What do you think about that, Rachel?
I'm very excited. I have so many questions.
And I can guarantee you that Patrick Crane will be joining us for that show. Patrick actually had met Lloyd back a couple weeks ago. Lloyd is touring with his new film, Shakespeare's Shitstorm, and Patrick did a Q&A with him out in the Oklahoma City area. And so definitely we're very, very jazzed about that. And before we're even thanking Lloyd right now before he comes on. So, and also I want to give a shout out to Joel Weinkoop too. Because Joel definitely had an influence on getting this done for us. So we want to thank Joel for that too. And Joel will probably call in for that more than likely. I just have to let him know when it is. So I'd say that's pretty much what we have so far. So any last things to say, Miss Rachel?
I think we're all set to just say good night.
All right. Well, folks, thanks for listening. Please take some time and watch the Cuphead show on Netflix. It is well worth it. And we will see you next Tuesday. All right. Take care. Say good night, Miss Rachel.
Good night, Miss Rachel.
Don't let the bed bugs bite. And just a second here. And let's say good night.
Good night.
Come on. Here we go.